Chapter 4, Rate Control.
So does he need to be rate controlled and anticoagulated without cardioversion?
That is a great question. Yeah. That seems like it would be the safe thing to do.
So I think I'd like to start him on diltiazem. And if his blood pressure does drop, we'll have pressors ready going in that case. But I think that this might be our best choice.
I want you to make the decision. And that sounds good to me. I think all of these are reasonable options and no single one is perfect. So let's go with dilt. Let's see how he does. So in this case, we're going to opt for rate control. And I think this begs the question, who gets rate control? So anyone who doesn't fit cleanly into that 48-hour time of onset, you're not going to cardiovert them unless they're crashing. You're going to do rate control. And there's a couple of different ways to do this, but the general categories here are your beta blockers and your calcium channel blockers. So Stuart, I'm giving you the tough questions. Which one should I choose? When and why?
Well, the one that you didn't mention is digoxin, which, remember, for all of us guys that have been doing this for a while, was the mainstay. That's what we all learned to do. We used to call it digitalizing the patient.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
And that was the wasn't a rectal exam, Jess. That was the way that we did it. We would give these intermittent doses of digoxin, which, as you know, is an AV nodal blocker, but it would take hours and hours to work. And so in our modern setting, we're almost always using either diltiazem, which is a favorite of emergency physicians, or metoprolol, the beta blocker, which tends to be a bit of a favorite of the cardiologist, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
They're both effective. And in a lot of cases, just a matter of preference, like the patient had been on the drug before and was comfortable with it. You know, you might have had a patient with some metoprolol. But there's a couple of times where it's really clear that one is indicated over the other.
Yes.
And our case is one of them. The guy is in floored CHF.
Mm-hmm.
So the last med in the world I want to give to this guy is a beta blocker, because not only is it going to slow his rate, but it's going to make his heart contract less effectively. It's a negative inotrope. The diltiazem, much more just focused on AV nodal block and doesn't do as much to decrease the contractility of the heart. So I think the choice of diltiazem is the best one in this case. And just a couple of other minor points is that, don't forget, if the patient's got asthma, COPD, you know, beta blockers could be real dangerous.
They need their beta receptors.
Right.
Actually, you want to hit them with some albuterol if they're in COPD exacerbation as well. So the last thing you want to do is block that.
Right. On the other hand, if a thyroid is part of the equation, it is about the beta blockers, because we know that thyroid really responds to a beta blockade. That's the ideal treatment for it. So a little bit of nuance there. But in general, emergency physicians are more comfortable with diltiazem, I'd have to say.
Okay, so we're going to opt for rate control. Now, the next question is, what is our goal? What are we aiming for here? And I think that this is also sort of a moving target, and it depends on the patient that's in front of you. So some of the guidelines will say that you should aim for a heart rate of less than 80 for symptomatic management, but that seems really aggressive to me, Stuart. I by no means would be aiming for that with this patient. I feel like that might kill him.
I mean, this guy is sick. And he's depending upon an adrenergic outflow to some degree to keep his pressure up, to keep the guy going. And so we don't want to artificially impair his heart's ability to compensate for his illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so driving a patient's heart rate down to the 60s, 70s, 80s, when they really need 100, 110, they're acutely ill with stuff, could be really dangerous. And so err on the side of gentle when you're taking someone's heart rate down. Take note of what's happening. Hey, how are they looking? As I've gotten this little dose of diltiazem on board, as their heart rate begins to come down, they looking better or they looking worse?
Right.
Is this failure getting better? Is this failure getting worse? And you can sort of titrate your way out of it.
Okay, so rate control nuts and bolts. What doses are we talking about?
So I'm most comfortable with diltiazem. I've been using it for a long time now, since the DIG days. And the standard dose is to give about 20 milligrams to, that's what you should say to the nurse, by the way, Jess. Give about 20 milligrams.
Give about 20 milligrams. That's what I say.
Number one, I don't like that. Number two, that sounds very Canadian. But 20 milligrams is a pretty standard starting dose of diltiazem. And you wait a few minutes, and that will take a lot of the patient's heart rates down to a rate that you're happier with. And then after that point, you could start them on a drip and then convert them to oral therapy. Now, we have lots of pharmacists helping us these days with those conversions. And I think that's a good thing, because there's, you know, there's different preparations and stuff. But everyone needs to have a comfortable way of switching people onto the oral medications after they're on the drip initially. And if the initial 20 milligrams isn't effective, the recommended dose is a second dose of 25 milligrams of diltiazem. So that's pretty standard. There's variations on it. What I tend to do, and Mel does this as well, is give about 10 milligrams, especially in like little old frail people, and then wait a few minutes, because they might have an exaggerated response, and I'd rather not be that aggressive out front. And then I'll sort of titrate 10 milligrams at a time until I get the effect I want. and then convert them to a drip and oral therapy after that.
Now, if you're doing metoprolol, then the standard dose for metoprolol would be 5 milligrams, right? And then wait 5 minutes and see if they respond, and then you can repeat it 2 more times.
That's exactly right. One of the differences between metoprolol and diltiazem, Jess, is that the diltiazem IV wears off real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so after 20, 30 minutes, if you don't have them on a drip, you know, you're going to lose the effect and their rate's going to go back up again. Metoprolol lasts longer. And so as you're giving it IV, it's accumulating. And so you won't have to, you know, be as concerned about that. So in some ways, that's better, but not in this guy.
Now, the other point that I really want to make about this, let's say you have someone who's in that 48-hour time window and you actually have the luxury of choice. Am I going to use electricity and cardiovert him, or am I just going to do rate control with either metoprolol or diltiazem, for example? If you choose rate control, just be aware that you are setting that patient up for a whole pathway of care that is going to follow that one choice that you made. They're going to go home on that medication. So now they're on a new medication, a beta blocker or a calcium channel blocker. They're going to need possibly anticoagulation. They're going to need cardiology follow-up. They're going to need a transesophageal echocardiogram to look for thrombus. And then they're going to need at some point a cardioversion or ablation procedure. So just that one choice right there, if you have the luxury of choosing and you choose rate control, it has implications down the line.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of the Canadian philosophy, which is, you know, we are just wasting a lot of money here for very little benefit in terms of our setting patients up for that kind of standard pathway of more doctors' visits and stuff.
Yeah,
and so
Huge inconvenience for them.
And if it was me, I can totally see myself saying, just convert me.
Yes.
I don't even want meds to convert me. Just convert me. I don't want side effects. Just convert me. So I can see there's a lot of compelling reasons. And that's why in a lot of ERs, even in the United States, it is pretty routine to cardiovert people. And they've got protocols and cards on board.
So rate control is what it's been about for years. Just slow the rate by blocking the AV node to slow the impulses from the atrium into the ventricle. That will allow increased diastolic filling time and an increased cardiac output. The agents we generally use is something like diltiazem. Cardiologists like beta blockers, although they're very negative inotropic, they can make CHF worse. But in sick people with bad hearts, no matter what you do, it can make things worse. So you've got to be very careful about this. Digoxin theoretically can make people pump a little bit better, but not very effective, takes a very long time to work. So there's lots of different choices here. No perfect choice. We wish there was a perfect choice. But the downsides to pure rate control is that now these people are going to have to be on anticoagulation long-term as well. So for acute onset atrial fibrillation, less than 48 hours, there is a big move to just try and give these people a couple of chances of getting back into sinus rhythm and seeing if they'll stay there. It's not clear long-term if they will stay there, but if it's me, I'm like Stuart. If I just go into atrial fibrillation, just pop me back into sinus rhythm. Let's see if it works, because I don't want to take these drugs for rate control for decades. And then all the anticoagulations, I don't want it. And again, there's a big divide. Most ER docs use diltiazem. Most cardiologists like beta blockers. And the few head-to-head studies that we have suggest that actually the diltiazem's better, but don't tell the cardiologist that.
So now that we've covered rhythm control, and now we've talked about rate control, let's hear how the case ends, shall we?
Yeah, what happened?
So how's he doing, Janelle?
So his blood pressure is 110 over 70s. And
so not bad. That's not bad, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And then his heart rate's now down into the 110s. Why don't we go back and talk to him?
Feeling better, not as anxious, breathing isn't labored. That's all I can say right now.
You still feel out of breath?
A little bit, but not as bad as what I was.
Okay. So we're making a little progress.
Yeah.
Did you talk to cardiology yet?
Yeah, I already spoke to cardiology. I'm also admitting him to the hospital, so he'll be going up shortly.
Yeah, you know, the combination of atrial fibrillation and CHF, no matter how they got there, is a really tough one to deal with, because the medication that we're using to slow the heart rate, the diltiazem usually, mostly it blocks the AV node, but it also has a little bit of a peripheral effect
right.
In terms of vasodilation, and it can lower the blood pressure a bit. So when they're already having trouble with their cardiac output from CHF, sometimes when you lower their heart rate with the calcium channel blocker, they can actually drop their pressure significantly. And so it's a little bit of a tricky situation when you have those two together. In some cases, you can mitigate the drop in blood pressure that happens when you give a calcium channel blocker, we think, by giving some calcium to actually mitigate the peripheral effects. It doesn't affect the slowing of the heart rate. And some people do that. There's just a little bit of evidence for it. It's a little controversial. So giving an amp of calcium gluconate for example, along with the diltiazem doses is something that people do in this scenario.
And then you can, of course, be ready to stand by with pressors, as Janelle mentioned. You know, there's one other thing that I want to make sure that you clarify for us, because the patient had said that he was on amlodipine before, which is a calcium channel blocker. But what's interesting about amlodipine?
Well, I think some people might be thinking, oh, this guy went into a faster heart rate because he stopped taking his amlodipine. I remember that one point he said that.
Yes.
Oh, maybe amlodipine was controlling this because it's a calcium channel blocker and now it's out of control. That's not the case, because the calcium channel blockers differ in the amount of AV block they make. So diltiazem and verapamil are all nice AV blockers. Most of their action is slowing the heart rate through the AV blockade. Amlodipine, a different calcium channel blocker, is really almost exclusively acting in the periphery, in those peripheral blood vessels that we were just talking about that cause low blood pressure. So amlodipine lowers the blood pressure, but doesn't really lower the heart rate.